If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's talk some baseball. Dave Schoenfeld, who is senior writer for ESPN.com. Dave, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
You know, we went from being ready to bury the Royals after they lost six in a row to now they swept the Twins, they're red hot, and we're talking about playoff scenarios. We don't know how the hell to handle a 60-game season, and so it's been a wild ride so far. But the Royals have played much better, and one thing that has been exciting, whether they compete or not this year, is the arrival of Brady Singer and Chris Bubich and the emergence of Josh Staumont in the bullpen. So some young arms that are going to be the foundation of the future for the Royals have been on display, and boy, have we liked what we've seen. Any thoughts on the Royals having two-fifths of the rotation with these rookies and then Staumont in the bullpen playing such key roles right now early in this young season?
Yeah, look, no doubt. It's if your team's going to be mediocre or bad, the least you can hope for is at least you have some young guys that are interesting, you know. Whether this group is going to be, you know, akin to where the Royals were in, 2011 or 2012, I don't know. But the future of the franchise, no doubt it rests on these young starting pitchers, you know, and how good they're going to be. So I'm glad they're up, you know, getting that experience. You know, so many teams, finagle the service time. So I think it's good, and it's the right thing to do to give these guys some action in the majors. And, yeah, like you said, they've looked good so far. Singer, of course, was a first-round pick a couple years ago, you know, after a stellar college career. I'm curious to see how these guys do over, 10, 12 starts this year.
And it's been interesting, too, because the question that each of these teams have to ask, and I know you talked about trying to manipulate service time and everything, but, you know, if you have a prospect that's ready to contribute, but he's not on the big league team, then how do you handle his development? You know, what else is he doing without minor league baseball? That's certainly been a unique challenge for all the teams, right?
Yeah, no doubt. You know, especially those guys that are on the cusp of the majors. And look, it's one thing, I get it. If you know you're a playoff team and going for the playoffs and this is one of your best 25 players, that's a little easier to call them. But it's for the teams, you know, like Kansas City, Seattle, you know, Baltimore. Baltimore's off to a decent start, but they're not very good. You know, what do those teams do with these young guys? You know, are you worried about, is this guy going to be a free agent after 2025, or do we wait until after 2026? That's so far down the road. And I hope this issue gets corrected in the next CBA. If a guy is one of your top 25 players, you know, he should be in the major leagues. And there is that value to that experience. You know, yeah, facing guys in inter-squad games, that's, you're not going to learn much doing that. So get Brady Singer and Chris Bubich up here and get them some action, and they'll be more prepared next April.
So one of the things that's been going well for the Royals as well since this little winning streak that they're on has been that their bats have actually come around. At the beginning of the year, I just kept looking at their strikeout to walk ratio offensively and thought, man, this is going to be a rough year offensively. But all of a sudden, even some of the advanced metrics say this is a decent offensive team. Where do you come down on what the Royals are offensively right now?
Yeah, I just wrote a thing on the Astros, and some of their big guys are hitting, and, you know, it feels lame to say small sample size, but that's the case with every team in the majors. You know, you don't want to overreact, you know, whether positively or negatively. Look, I'm still looking at those strikeout-to-walk ratios, and, you know, Alberto Mondesi, 18-2. It's just, I want this kid to develop a little better approach. He has the tools, but what's he ever going to be, you know, if he's swinging at everything, you know? And he's been in the majors a few years now, and his development has stalled. He's a big concern to me. Soler and Merrifield, they're established players. Soler proving last year wasn't a fluke. That's great to see. You know, the rest of the lineup, you know, look, are any of these guys going to be here in 3 years? Probably not, you know. So it's all about, to me, developing Mondesi, you know, and hoping Merrifield and Soler are still, you know, good players down the road.
Dave Schoenfeld's our guest. Okay, so we all wish it was a 162-game season, a normal season. It's not. But we have the 60-game season now that's in front of us. What's your favorite thing about it and about the adjusted rules and the format or anything about this season? And then what do you hate the most about it?
Yeah, I think we have a piece going up today. Maybe it's tomorrow. We have a roundtable with some of our ESPN writers discussing all the new rules. You know, the four big ones being, of course, the runner on second and extra innings, the three-batter minimum, the seven-inning doubleheaders, and what's the fourth one? Oh, well, the universal DH. Those are the four big ones. I kind of like all of them. you know, look, does anybody miss, you know, seeing a pitcher hit? Not really. You know, those of us who grew up watching American League Baseball, we've spent all our lives with the DH. It's fine, National League fans. You're going to learn to love it. Pitchers can't hit. It's okay. You know, yeah, it takes
down
a little of the strategy. I don't know. I like the runner on second. You know, I think it adds an instant element of excitement. I don't know. Do you guys liking that so far? I don't know if the Royals have played any extra any games, but
they did
fun.
Right off the bat the first weekend. And because I was like, I don't know. I know it's been going on in other levels, but let me see it. And so then I'm watching. And it was fun. And now they won, and it was funny because then the Cleveland Indians tweeted out, "We hate this new rule," or something like that, because they lost. But it was funny. But it was more exciting. There was more anticipation, and so it was one of those things. Well, let me see it play out and how it actually looks when I'm watching the Royals play. And I digged it, and I love universal DH. I've been campaigning that forever, and I think that's terrific. And so I like the expanded playoffs as well. So I'm kind of in your boat where I like everything. And so I think that there were some things that baseball needed to do to try to appeal more to the fan, especially the younger fan base. So I'm all for that.
Yeah, you have to adapt. I mean, every other sport, you know, makes changes. Right? I mean, I know the 3-point shot's been around forever, but when that came out, people were like, no, basket's 2 points. How can you give 3 points for a basket? NFL is constantly rejiggering, you know, pass interference rules and stuff like that to open up for more offense. So baseball, we're always stuck in this. This is the way we've been doing it since 1887. And, you know, for the most part, that's great. That's part of what makes baseball special, that we have this history and this constant way of playing the game, you know, for so long. But, you know, as fun as that one 18-inning game a year is, you know, it's okay to lose that, you know, if we can create more excitement, you know, in the 10th inning or the 11th inning.
Yeah, I like the extra innings thing because there's you sit up and watch immediately instead of waiting to see if anybody's ever going to get on base.
Yep.
And actually, I know that statistically it causes a lot of problems because there's so much randomness in baseball. It stands out to me. What I asked you earlier about this little stretch the Royals are on, and you said everything's a small sample size. I think that's probably true, but I'm actually liking the fact that these games all matter so much more. I mean, when the team goes on a 4-game winning streak, you can get really, really excited about it because that makes a big difference. And I'm not suggesting they should go down to a 60-game schedule, but Do you think this will lead us to maybe seriously consider reducing the regular season by some number going forward?
Look, I think an optimal schedule would have fewer games. I hate those playoff games late in October when it's cold and rainy. I remember one of those World Series games in Kansas City a few years ago. It was cold and rainy. You know, I think a baseball season should end about mid-September, get the playoffs over by mid-October. But this is not going to happen. You know, there's just too much revenue. You know, there's so much revenue gained from all the local TV games, and obviously teams want as many of those games on as possible. You know, I would love to see, you know, even the old 154 game schedule cut a week would be nice. I would prefer, you know, 144, but the odds of that, you know, ever happening right now in the near future, probably slim. But yeah, I think we're learning 162 games is a lot. Remember, you know, when teams back in the day, when you had the 154 games, they played a ton of doubleheaders. I was looking this up. Teams in the 30s and 40s would play 24, 25 doubleheaders a year. So the season ended earlier. You had more off days, you know, but we're not going to go back to 1937.
Dave Schoenfeld from ESPN's our guest. I wanted to ask you about Jeff Passan's report from last night, and people can read that at ESPN.com, that MLB has had preliminary discussions about holding its postseason in a bubble-type format. After, you know, we've seen what's happened with the Cardinals and the Marlins that wreaked havoc on the regular season schedule, and this is according to sources familiar with the conversations, it wouldn't be a fully contained bubble, but a multi-city format that replicates the NHL's Toronto and Edmonton, Alberta hubs has gained traction. So do you think we're going to see something like that for the postseason?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. You know, especially, you know, it's pretty much guaranteed that we're not going to have fans at all, even when we get to the playoffs, right? The virus is still too strong in so many places across the country. So yeah, we've seen so far the success of the NBA and the NHL models with these bubbles. Like you said, baseball wouldn't be exactly the same. They'd probably, you know, according to Jeff's report, you'd probably have to do it in a city with two stadiums. So you're looking at LA, Chicago, or New York. LA probably makes a little more sense because of the weather. You could maybe use San Diego as a third park if needed. You know, I know Jeff's report said this is very preliminary, so we don't want to overreact, but it kind of makes sense to me to try to limit the travel as much as possible.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing they need to ensure is that they're actually going to be able to play this season out to a conclusion, right? how do you think this is going to play out with the Cardinals?
Yeah. I don't know. You know, we've been talking about this. They, you know, they played five games. You know, the Braves have played 18. They haven't, you know, their doubleheader Thursday has already been canceled. So if they do actually play Friday, I mean, you know, 2 weeks between games. They're so far behind. I don't know how they can ever make up, you know, the rest of the games. You know, and I know Tim Kirkjian mentioned this on his podcast yesterday that players from opposing teams are getting a little ticked off, worried that the Cardinals might sneak into the playoffs playing, you know, a lot fewer games than everybody else. This is all assuming everything else goes smoothly the rest of the way. So, I don't know. My question is why not force the Cardinals to bring up, you know, the junior varsity? You know, we have these alternate training sites with 30 additional players. Why haven't these guys been called up, you know? Just to get the games in, but baseball's chosen not to do that.
So is there going to be, because I've heard several people ask this, is there going to be like a minimum games required for them to be in contention for the playoffs, or is it just going to be however many games they finish by the end of the season?
Well, that's the problem, is baseball's winging it. Look, you got to hope the Cardinals finally get going this weekend and they can at least make up, you know, some of those games. But, you know, say they're 10 games less than everybody else, you know, I don't know. It's a tough situation. You know, we've had seasons in the past where teams played different amount of games. Most famous, 1973, maybe it was 72, they had a strike at the start of the year. So about 7 or 8 games were canceled. They didn't make up. They just picked up the schedule where they were at. And in the NL East, the Mets won the division that year by half a game. They played one more game or one less game than I think it was Pittsburgh. So imagine that scenario where the Cardinals sneak in as the number 8 seed over a team that played a full season. Yeah, that's not going to be a pretty situation.
I mean, part of me wants to say they ought to just kick him out and say you play on.
Yeah.
You know, I'm serious. Like, you laugh about it, but like,
yeah.
You know, in Major League Soccer, they had to kick two teams out of the bubble because they had outbreaks on the team. Now, I understand that causes all kinds of scheduling problems for all the teams that were supposed to play the Cardinals the rest of the year, right? I'm assuming that's the biggest reason to not kick him out right now.
Yeah, well, this sounds like a Kansas City radio station wanting to kick the Cardinals out.
I've campaigned to get the Cardinals kicked out now for 27 years, and so I don't know where Nate's coming from with this, but I've tried my best.
And their pizza and barbecue can go with them.
My joke, would it be is there anything more Cardinals than, like, they go 8-8, sneak into the playoffs and then win the World Series.
Kind of right.
Like back in 2006 when they won, 82 games and won the World Series. You know, that would be like the ultimate Cardinals thing to do. You know, they're not going to kick him out, of course. But yeah, look, if it comes Friday, I say call up the junior varsity kid. You know, give them some roster exemption rules so they don't have to kick guys off the 40-man roster or whatever. But make them play with the JV squad. You know, they weren't able to contain their players. That's their problem, not the rest of MLB's problem.
It's pretty safe to say that this league across the board did not take this seriously enough in the way they handled this at the beginning. Some teams might be, but across the board, they didn't take it seriously enough, and it's going to cause serious problems for them the rest of this season.
It just seems clear they didn't anticipate, you know, or prepare what happens if there is a big breakout. You know, I think they're like, okay, if one or two players test positive, fine. They got to quarantine for 10 or 14 days. They call up some players from the alternate site. That all makes sense. But obviously, when we've had these major outbreaks with the Marlins and the Cardinals, there was no plan B on what to do if that happened. And that's the thing. They had months to prepare for this and plan for all these scenarios, and they weren't ready.
Well, we'll wrap things up with, and you mentioned the article that you have that posted at ESPN.com, fact-checking the Houston Astros' slow start. I'd like just to get your thoughts on Houston and how they've reacted to everything. And look, we thought that, okay, they dodge a bullet here. There's not going to be fans that will be heckling them, and they'll be all right. Well, they've still been involved in a couple of scuffles, including what took place between the A's, and so they're still getting it. What about Houston? Yep. Is this getting to them? Is it just, like you said, a small sample size and a slow start? What of Houston right now?
Yeah, it sounds lame to say small sample size. You know, Jose Altuve, Alex Bregman, George Springer, kind of the three big stars who are struggling so far. Altuve is the one I would be a little concerned about. I'm not saying it's because he's not cheating. In fact, when all those reports came out, they said he was the one guy that wasn't taking advantage of their system. So in his case, it could be age. He's 30. He's been beat up a little the last couple of years. But again, it's 15 games. Don't want to read into it. But, yeah, the Astros, they're off to a slow start. They've had 9 rookies in the bullpen. Their entire bullpen is basically rookies right now. So that's a problem. Obviously, Justin Verlander's out, and they lost Gerrit Cole. So, yeah, they're not going to be the same team just because you lose the top two guys in the Cy Young voting. So they're vulnerable, you know, no doubt. And that helps teams like the Royals that looks like this AL race is going to be much more wide open than we thought. The Red Sox are bad. I'm not buying the Orioles. The Mariners are bad. The Angels have looked really bad. The Rangers are bad. So, but somebody's got to make the playoffs. So, you know, I think we're going to see a couple under 500 teams in the AL sneak in. So why not the Royals?
What did you think of the situation that happened between the Astros and the A's?
Yeah, look, it's bound to happen because there's bad blood from all the other teams towards the Astros. It's just a little odd to see a coach get involved. And you know, look, we haven't heard yet what the suspensions are going to be, but they're going to come down hard because that's in that big 100-page rule book on the protocols. You know, no fighting, no brawling, no arguing with umpires. Yet, you know, the A's and the Astros couldn't contain themselves. That's just what we want. 70 guys, you know, breathing down each other's necks in a brawl. So I'll be curious to see, you know, how severe these suspensions. Not only Ramon Laureano, he's going to get, you know, 8-10 games. It wouldn't shock me if Alex Cintron, the Houston coach, gets booted for the rest of the year. You know, I think that's a possibility for kind of, you know, egging Laureano on and, you know, the other players. I don't know, for leaving, you know, what's the NHL rule? Leaving your bench or whatever, you can't do that. You know, they all might get a game or two. I don't know. You know, it'll be interesting to see what comes down.
Hey, Dave, thanks for the time, man. We appreciate you coming on the show.
You bet. Anytime, guys.
Appreciate you. That's Dave Schoenfeld. You can read his latest article at ESPN.com about the Houston Astros' slow start. And so very interesting stuff there. And we will be right back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.